You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Currently, only essential services are operating. Much of those essential services are everyday things like buses or food stores, those things that keep us going to work and keep us alive. The workers in these areas are often classified as unskilled, which brings with it hugely negative connotations about a person's worth in regard to their work. Hannah Thompson looked into this and spoke with Associate Professor of Sociology at the University of Auckland and a researcher at the think tank Economic and Social Research Aotearoa.
Looking at some of the jobs that have been classified as essential services under lockdown, jobs like stacking supermarket shelves, aged care, food production and distribution, being a bus driver, a lot of these jobs are also unskilled labour. Can you unpack that for us? What does unskilled mean?
The question of these skilled or not skilled jobs, we can just assume the social classifications about what counts as a skilled job. We'd assume that being a particle physicist is a very skilled and highly skilled job, and that other things that many people could do are generally less skilled. But here we run into the problem of how the way in which skill is conceived of by economists is extremely particular. That is to say, it's not so much about a ranking of the complexity of human cognition or emotion or skill, but rather how replaceable that worker is. That's crucial to understand about how capitalist economics defines skill. That is to say, if the action in question is something that many, many people can do, then that work is generally considered to be unskilled, whereas if it's the kind of activity is hard to be replaced or substituted, that is to say, if it's scarce, then it's considered to be higher skill. And that's a pretty strange way of thinking about skill, but it's the way of talking about skill that generally predominates in economic language.
Is that replaceability, is that what's implicit in the classification of certain types of work as being unskilled?
Absolutely. And that's the point I'm trying to make here, which is to say that to be able to care for another human being, to be able to look after someone when they're sick, to be able to make meals for other people, to be able to have relationships with other people, these are incredible achievements. These are uniquely human abilities. And we in much of our practical life marvel when we see other people do these things. But because those are skills which are generic across human beings, they don't achieve a market value insofar as they're distinctive and exclusive. And so that tendency of thinking about value in terms of scarcity, restriction, monopolization of something which you can't allow access to, those are crucial categories in how economists today, and as a result many politicians, conceive of skill. At the same time, what we have seen in the last couple of weeks is a profound redefinition of the way in which we think about which kind of activities, what kind of jobs, what kind of work are valuable. Many jobs which the workers who do them are potentially replaceable or substitutable, those jobs are absolutely crucial to ongoing human well-being and survival. So that's why we're seeing that the supply of food, supply of healthcare and so forth are absolutely essential in a way that they weren't being valued as absolutely essential even a few months ago.
What does this reclassification show?
I'd say what it does is it opens up a different set of ways of valuing human activity and skill, which have always bubbled under, right? They've always been there. And this is more a judgment about human activity in terms of how useful it is, how much utility it genuinely provides for human beings, as opposed to the value of what that labour can command on the market. And so what we've seen in the past 2 weeks is the return to a number of values which don't play by the law of the normal market, economic or capitalist valuation system. That is to say, we've entered into a kind of situation that we didn't really know of outside of wartime, of non-market provision of a number of things. Access to healthcare is one of those, but also providing of wages to large portions of the population, at least in this country, in order that people can survive. Because if left to the mechanisms of the market, people would, in this country, simply be dying, as in other countries it looks like they are and will be.
You mentioned wartime as a comparison for our current situation. Do you think that these massive crises prompt society to rethink things?
Absolutely. And what we are seeing around the world is moves to thinking about value and the value of people's activities differently. And many people who have been going through this crisis have had time to reflect and are thinking exactly about what kind of ways of valuing human labour and activity we want to have after this crisis. And that's in part because we've got a situation now where in this country, for many workers, they are effectively being paid their salary through their employer by the government. That is to say, they're not being paid for the amount of value they produce for their employer, but rather they're being given a wage just for their existence as a human being.
There's been a lot of stories in the news about essential workers being mistreated by the public. For example, in Warkworth, a manager at Countdown was punched in the face by a customer. Does the classification of certain types of work as being unskilled affect whether the workers are respected?
These situations you mention now are unfortunately the norm in many forms of low-paid service work. Routinely being subject to insult, abuse, and physical violence is the norm in certain types of work. And so the instances you mention now, they're consistent with a pattern of disrespecting and trivialising and treating really as mere hands to achieve labour for other people. That's consistent with the entire way of thinking about workers in a capitalist economy. So those are terrible things that have happened that you mentioned, but I think we need to remember that being subject to horrible offence because of the status of certain types of work or worker, these are truly grotesque but are normal. So many listeners who hear this will not be surprised. You know, if you work in a cafe, if you work in a store, these kind of experiences of being subjected to belittlement and abuse are normal, unfortunately. And that's to do with the way in which we value and fail to respect and protect some of the most essential and crucial human beings in a society like ours.
And when you look at supermarket workers, they're all paid very low wages.
We're talking about workers who are now, by the new system, counted to be essential, but are not paid a living wage. This is a situation in which there's a show evaluation of these essential workers. Now, one of the ways in which we back up our symbols of support and thanks for essential workers is that, as the economists put it, we put our money where our mouth is. And there are ways in which we could value these essential workers now, through and out and after the crisis. And the most basic measures here would be to make sure that all of these people who are producing value for society, who are producing useful things, are paid at the very least a living wage. And to not pay essential workers a living wage is part of the grotesque cruelty of a capitalist system that allows people to be priced according to supply and demand, as it's put by the economists. That is to say, by the relative power of the purchasers and the sellers of labour power.
Do you think that the switch to classifying these types of work as being essential will shift public perception?
When we talk about what's essential, what's valued, what's not, I think we probably learn a lot from remembering struggles around the status of the kinds of work which are generally unwaged but are crucial to continuing human survival. And by that I'm referring to the work of social reproduction, the work which is done of bringing children into the world, of raising children, of caring for human beings, of providing food and social solidarity and support for other human beings. And all of that work, which is a massive amount of labour, roughly as many hours as the number of hours that are contributed to paid work, that work of social reproduction in societies like ours is valued very, very lowly, or is trivialised and treated as a kind of act of love. There are a number of types of work which are essential to human societies which are not paid. And that should make us pause to think about the valuation or devaluation of those kind of activities.
Looking at jobs that incorporate this sort of caring function, there's kind of a trivialization of their work as well. They don't have personal protective equipment, even though a lot of them take care of very vulnerable people.
This is where it's really important to understand how it is that capital, you know, business leaders, investors, employers, values people's work, and how that differs from the set of societal values that in a society we say we want to value, that we think we value. Now, we have the opportunity now, a world historic opportunity, to have a series of conversations about how we'd value things differently.
Migrant labour is an important part of this discussion, especially when you're talking about aged care or food production. What we see with the way that New Zealand's immigration system works is that it's a point system, and your skill level and your salary level are the two biggest factors for whether New Zealand wants you to stay in the country. But what we're seeing now is that a lot of the essential work that migrants do does not qualify.
This is a situation in which economists and politicians around the world are waking up to. A lot of the absolutely crucial things to keep things simply working, the cleaning, the transport work, a lot of these forms of work which were trivialized as being just replaceable workers are now shown to be absolutely central to the system. But this is the point that I'm trying to make here about how capital will value certain types of work. Capital does not value work because it produces useful things. Capital values work because it produces profit. It produces surplus value. It produces the amount of labor which doesn't get paid to the worker when they continue to extend their working day beyond what is required to reproduce themselves. The values of capitalist treating of skilled or what it calls unskilled labor, which is to say the vast majority of humanity is unskilled, according to capital. This is a grotesque system. And there are human values that we've seen very strongly shining out in the last couple of weeks that also have long-standing tradition, right? In this particular country, if we put the principles of manaakitanga, of care for and respect, of hospitality and welcome and generosity to other people, at the start of our economic life, we would be in a very, very different situation.
In light of everything that this crisis has shown us about what kind of work is truly valuable, what changes should we make going forward?
It's important to remember that we don't need to kind of make the whole anew. And there are some very important ways of thinking about value and what's valuable that already exist in this country and other places as well. The ideas of a dignity, of a need to respect every human being. That there are ways in which we can place the mana of every human being and the increasing and strengthening of that mana through giving opportunities. These can and should be at the base of how we think about how economic life is rebuilt after the crisis. So there are a number of already existing values there. What we need to be clear as well is that currently the economic system is being run by a very, very small enclave of very specifically trained and ideologically partisan group of economists who have a very, very, very particular idea of how an economy should work. And that includes a whole moral valuation of certain ideas of market freedoms and all the rest of this that goes with it. Now, those have long been in crisis, and there were signs before Corona, there were signs of those being challenged. But the challenge against those values now takes on a kind of life or death flavour. And this could maybe remind us of the interconnectedness of human beings. And I don't say that in some kind of magical kind of dancing around a tree kind of sense, but the fact that it's our very interconnections with other people that has transmitted this virus. And the thing that I think we need to remember as well is that our desire to be with other people is at the heart of many of the breaches of the very rules that are protecting us. People want to see each other. People want to be with each other. And so in some ways, we are seeing a profound reminder of the fact that human beings can do many things. They can disregard, they can discount, they can treat the work of other people as of little or of nothing, but they also can respect other people and value other people. What we'll need after this crisis is an economic system that matches those social and cultural values of care and concern. Because it is one thing to say that we must be kind during this time of crisis, and it is a completely different one to build an economic system that is structurally and in its core kind to everyone. So if we want to take that language of kindness seriously, then we need to understand exactly the unkind practices of expropriation of wealth that are characteristic of the normal operation of capitalism. And against that and in contesting those unkindnesses, build economic options which genuinely will build on respect for all, participation of all, and kindness for all.
That was Campbell Jones. After hearing that interview, I came across a clip on Instagram from a BBC anchor responding to some comments made by the UK Prime Minister. I thought that could be relevant to play here.
Hello, good evening. The language around COVID-19 has sometimes felt trite and misleading. You do not survive the illness through fortitude and strength of character, whatever the Prime Minister's colleagues will tell us. And the disease is not a great leveller, the consequences of which everyone, rich or poor, suffers the same. This is a myth which needs debunking. Those serving on the front line right now, bus drivers and shelf stackers, nurses, care home workers, hospital staff and shopkeepers, are disproportionately the lower paid members of our workforce. They are more likely to catch the disease, because they are more exposed. Those who live in tower blocks and small flats will find the lockdown tougher. Those in manual jobs will be unable to work from home. This is a health issue with huge ramifications for social welfare, and it's a welfare issue with huge ramifications for public health.
Just a good reminder there, and we've had a text in regarding this type of work. Someone's saying, actually, I'd challenge anyone who thinks aged care is unskilled to go and do it for a month. Having spent a lot of time observing with a disabled elderly loved one, I'm not sure it's something that I could do. It's a mix of psychology, kindness, manual labour, first line medical care, hazardous duties, etc. They are hugely skilled and valuable people. Thank you, Paul, for that text. Very important reminder again.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.